Jesus did. As countless faithful before us, we mark it solemnly, tenderly, and with lingering silences. It was a holiday, deliberately so. Crucifixion was meant to wipe out life and memory and name. But Jesus' name survived. The only name of a victim of crucifixion from the pre-Christian era to do so. Why Jesus' name survived is at the heart of the Easter story. His death was reality. Reality as dripping with blood as his body on the cross. But the Easter story is about more than death. Death we understand. It's part of ordinary living. Easter is about resurrection. It is not. And that's the problem. It isn't Jesus' death with which the world has struggled, but his resurrection. Crucifixion wouldn't wipe his name from history. Resurrection made sure of that. But if resurrection isn't reality, what is it? It isn't just non-Christians who had trouble with resurrection. So do Christians. Non-Christians can scoff and mock as they please. But we are supposed to believe in something we can neither explain, nor touch, nor see. And we all have a bit of talk about this anxious sounding doubt has slipped into pulpits and other words like renewal and renewed life, because these are easier to explain and relate to than resurrection. I know this happens. I've done it myself. Probably all preachers have done that, and we tell ourselves we should try to clarify, to make real. Because none of us knows how to lift that painted veil which is life, with all its lights and shadows and colours of dream time, and look beyond. And the poet Shelley cautions us, lift not the painted veil which those who live call life. Behind lurk fear and hope, twin destinies. Fear and hope. It was fear those two on the road to Emmaus knew, not hope. Hope had been stuck with nails on a cross and tattered remnants flung into a tomb, along with a corpse. So what now for these two disciples in a once again drear world? Jesus, inspiration and teacher, dead. Even more, his body, gone. What were they to believe? That Jesus hadn't really been dead? And wakened and walked away? That grave robbers had crept into the tomb in the night? That the women's tale of the body gone and a sighing angel saying Jesus had risen was true? Confused, disbelieving, spotted by grief, they hung towards the man, clinging to each other, fearful of capture as colleagues of the crucified man. What now of the faith that took them from home at the call of a wandering preacher? Who then joined them on the road? And they didn't know who he was. Their eyes were kept from recognizing him. That's what Luke says. Note the passive form of the verb, were kept from. It's classic biblical prose. God being in control of the action. We're not just meant to recognize Jesus and understand the meaning of the past day devastating events. This is God directing operations. Yes, it is. God saying, curse your enthusiasm all in the time. In the meantime, all they felt was astonishment that this stranger could be ignorant of what had happened. What? How can you not know? So they told him, over and over, words and passions tumbling from their mouths, finishing each other's sentences, grief and fear and disbelief, blurring the story as much as it blurs their minds. We hoped, they cried. Their voices bitter with disillusionment. We had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel, the Messiah. Well, it's easy for us to wonder how they could not recognize Jesus. They knew the man. But it's only easy because we know the end of the story. Besides, whence comes understanding of resurrection? Not from human experience, not from nature, not from anything they could see as they hurried along that road, birds, trees, sky, clouds, the clouds of blue and spring colour, breathe promises, many sunshine. But they breathe not a word of resurrection. They had nothing to do with the case. Were we in their place, we would have no more idea than that how to judge the experience they had had. Like them, we would probably think ourselves the center of the action and forget there might be other interpretations than ours. We would, I think, need to have all explained to us much as they did. And what they got, lucky soul, was a lesson from the master, the theologian of theologians, the ultimate storyteller, an explication of their history with their God, the meaning of their scriptures, the meaning of the Messiah. As they too walked the dusty road to Emmaus, they learned from their strangers that their story of an empty tomb and the women and the other disciples wasn't enough. Resurrection isn't about disappearances or appearances or revived corpses or miracles. Resurrection is about the meaning of God's plan and presence for Israel, for creation, for all whom God would love, for you and for me. The resurrection story these two have to learn, as do we, is much, much different than the one about Caiaphas, Pilate and Herod, or Barabbas and the crowd, bigger than a cross, bigger than blood, bigger than an empty tomb. It's a story, the stranger on the road taught them, that begins with Adam and Eve, and Moses and the prophets, and will not end even with the end of time. In the Garden of Eden, with a loving heart and an anticipating a walk and a comfortable chat in the cool of the evening breeze, God had called to Adam, "Where are you?" Enter disillusionment. For God then learned about man's first disobedience and the fruit of that forbidden tree whose mortal taste brought death into the world. And all our woes with loss of evil. We all know that story. And can pity God's sorrow at discovering humankind's duplicity. But from here, the story of resurrection broadens its scope, encompassing drama after drama, witnessing through the ages to God's faithfulness and human fickleness, God's loyalty and human disloyalty, covenant after covenant founded on the promises of God, with Noah and Abraham and David, admonitions from God to Israel, remember that you were enslaved in Egypt and the Lord your God redeemed you from there. Promises through the visions of prophets. To Ezekiel, I myself will be the shepherd of my sheep. To Isaiah, Israel, Israel, do not fear. For I have redeemed you. I have called you by name. You are mine. A huge story. A grand story. The stranger told those two men, and he wasn't finished with them yet. That was the past, which needed a future. And though the story told who he was, they still did not see him, the risen Christ, the Messiah. Their eyes were still kept from recognizing him until God being the moment right. And God deemed it right to open their eyes and their minds to the grace and courtesy of hospitality. One of the great graces of Israel's history with its God. God had offered hospitality to Israel, bringing them up out of Egypt to a land flowing with milk and honey. And demanded, God demanded, they be equally hospitable to others. For they had known what it was to be hungry and oppressed with alien and injured. The stranger sat with the two men at table, their guest, who became their host. He took bread, blessed and broke it, and gave it to them. Their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he vanished from their sight. We had hoped, they mourned, we had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel. Eyes opened, they knew he was. Eyes opened, they remembered the taste that took them from home at the call of a wandering preacher. Eyes opened. They forgot fear and remembered the possibility of another destiny, the one that is called hope. Eyes opened, they believed and knew the resurrection to be the gift of God for the people of God. Not a human work, not something stirred by the natural world where the sun rises and falls, predictably for all its beauty, but without the wonderful, unquenchable love of the resurrected Christ, the gift of God. Resurrection is glorious mystery. And faith, that other mysterious thing, sometimes faith so hard to keep hold of in this troubled world. Faith, which is that other gift of God, keeps our eyes open to catch glimpses of the power of the resurrection. My granddaughter Seth once asked me why Good Friday is called that. Shouldn't it be called Dead Friday, she wanted to know. I hope she will learn, as we all must, that we don't get the resurrection gift of Easter without the death of Good Friday, which makes it a very good day indeed. We learn that, of course, as we struggle with whatever troubles come our way. Those two on the road to Emmaus learned that. And they were able to put their fear aside and pick up the remnants of the hope they thought they had lost and set out on the road back to Jerusalem, to the other disciples, and to whatever future there was, because a man they thought was a stranger had told them the story of the God who loved them and died, that they might have a new future with new hope and a new story to tell. We live in difficult times, just as those who flee in Jerusalem for Emmaus did. Which destiny will we choose? Fear or faith? Let me leave you with some words written in another deeply, deeply troubled time, 1934, by T.S. Eliot. Remember the faith that took men from home at the call of a wandering preacher. Our age is an age of moderate virtue and of moderate life, when men will not lay down the cross because they will never assume it, that nothing is impossible, nothing, to men of faith and conviction. Let us therefore make perfect our will. O God.